Looking to transform your family game nights? At Perfectly Picked Games, we specialize in family games that bring everyone closer. Our games aren't just fun. Kids and teens will learn how to take turns, develop basic strategy skills, and understand the thrill of winning and grace of losing. With our exclusive gift of games, you can give months of gaming excitement to your family. Choose a 3-month or 6-month gift, and we'll deliver hand-picked family games to your doorstep every month. And here's the best part. Right now, you can use the promo code GOLDENMOJO and receive 20% off your selected plan. Don't miss out on this exclusive offer. Use promo code GOLDENMOJO and save 20% today at Perfectly Picked Games.
Welcome to the United States of Paranormal Podcast. Sit down and buckle up for an enlightening ride through everything cryptid, creepy, and paranormal.
Hello, all of my paranormal freaks out there. It is I, Golden J, hanging out with
the Rocker Chick
and
J-Dad
and
Peter.
Peter is back. I could not be happier that you're back with us.
Yeah.
I love it when you come on and do stories with us. They're always well thought out and very informative. And thank you for coming and doing this with us again.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for inviting me. Like I said, I get a kick out of it, so I enjoy it. As long as I enjoy it, I'll keep coming back as long as you'll let me.
Oh, we'll keep having you back, trust me.
And I'll probably have bad dreams tonight. Like I did the last time you were on here.
No aliens tonight, though.
Oh, that's good. It was just, you know, heads and jars last time.
That is correct. That you did have like dreams like the next couple nights after that about heads in jars and it's good. I've been having some weird dreams lately.
Oh yeah.
I don't know why. There's some, and I can't remember them specifically at this point, but I remember that I was like, why is this person in my dream? I haven't thought about this person in 10 years and they're in it. And it's been like that in a couple different dreams. Bobby said she had a weird dream last night.
Yeah.
That she doesn't really want to talk about. Is there something going on right now? Are you guys having weird dreams or?
No. I don't dream. And yeah, I mean, I woke up and I was like, yeah, didn't want to go back to sleep because I didn't want it to go back to that dream. Geez. So.
Do you think dreams are, is there anything?
There's a deeper meaning behind it, I'm sure, but I have no idea what the hell the meaning was. Dang.
Interesting. How about you, Peter? You ever?
Yeah, I actually had a weird dream the other night. It was a dream that it was like I was watching a movie. Like I wasn't in the dream. Like I was just observing what was going on in the dream. And I thought that was a little bit odd. Because normally when you dream, you know, it's something that's going on that you're part of.
Right.
And I was just kind of observing what was going on. I wasn't even in the dreams. Hmm. Kind of odd.
That is a little odd. That would be more interesting though. Because then you don't feel like you're I've had dreams where I was hiding under vehicles while explosions are going off and things like that. And I'm like in intimate danger. And then you wake up and your heart's racing and you're trying to get it out of your mind so you don't fall back into it. But I don't know. Crazy. Dreams, man. They're just so weird.
Weird.
I tried to do some research on some of that at one time, but because isn't there a famous philosopher or a famous scientist? I don't know what he was, but did like a dream book or whatever.
Probably.
Well, yeah. Probably.
I'm sure.
There's probably more than one. All right. Well, let me ask you this.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Who is your celebrity doppelganger? Of course, let me go first. Mine is easy. It's obvious. Brad Pitt.
Yeah, I see it.
I can see.
Okay.
Don't you think so?
Yeah, definitely.
I knew it. Actually, and realistically, Donnell Logan The lead for Grounded for Life. He's also in, I think he was in Gotham. He's now in The Equalizer. He's lost a lot of weight, so it's not quite as similar. But when he was in Grounded for Life, damn, we could almost be twins.
Yep, I almost. See that. Yeah. Way more than Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt, right here. Brad Pitt. Colton just spit his coffee out when I said that. All right, who wants to go next? Who wants to go next?
I'll go with Seth Rogen.
Ooh, okay. I can see that. Okay. Yeah. I like Seth Rogen. Mm-hmm. I loved his movie. You ever see the movie Zach and Mira Make a Porno?
Yep.
I actually have seen that one.
It's a good one. You get the double Dutch rudder. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. I'm telling you.
I've seen it once and I won't see it again.
Yeah, that's me.
I don't think I paid much attention either.
Didn't? Mm-mm. All right. All right, J Dub. Who's your celebrity doppelganger?
Bailey Madison.
From?
She did a horror movie back about like when little kids would lose their teeth, that they moved into this house and these little creatures were like, yeah, you had to feed them teeth and then they would stay away, but they didn't know about it because the guy that was feeding them teeth died.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
She's done a couple other or a few other movies, but they're not scary, so I haven't seen them. But okay. I've been told that.
All right.
Yeah. Look her up.
What is her name again?
Bailey Madison.
Okay. Look her up right now. Rocker chick.
Oh, this just off the top of my head. I'm going to say Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't know why. It's just, it was just, the name was there.
Okay. She is Buffy. All right. All right. Yeah, there you go. Celebrity doppelgangers.
Celebrity doppelgangers.
I'll tell you, it was funny. You know what? I can see that in some of the newer pictures, maybe not so much, but a couple of the older pictures, I can see that. It's spelled B-A-I-L-E-E, not with a Y. There's no Y. Just so you know.
Somebody, I was coming out of the gas station one time and some guy yelled at me and he goes, "Hey, you look like Michelle Rodriguez." And I'm like, no, I don't. No, I don't. Weird.
All right. Michelle Rodriguez.
I mean, she's beautiful. Don't get me wrong, but I do not look like her.
Bailey looks a little bit like Katie Holmes, too, in some of these pictures. Yeah. Look, there you go. There you go, people. Match it up. If you've not watched any of our videos that we've had out, if you're not on the Patreon and haven't watched those videos, haven't been to our website, UnitedStatesParanormal.com, and you don't know what J-Dub looks like, she looks like Bailey Madison. And of course, Bobby looks like Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
I'm going to look at that again. We'll talk later. We'll talk about that. I'll put you in one of those Daphne outfits.
See?
I'll be Fred. I'll wear an ascot.
There you go. There's your next Halloween costume.
Oh, there you go. All right, Peter. We are ready for you to take us away.
All right, so we're going to go back to the Pittsburgh area for my next story, and we're going to go to the South Hills of Pittsburgh, to the Brentwood area. We're going to talk about the demon of Brownsville Road, and this house is still there. The person of the main character of our story still lives there, and you can actually go there and stay there because it's a bed and breakfast now.
Oh, boy.
Nice.
But so we're going to talk about Bob Cranmer. Bob is the main person in our story, and he actually grew up in that Brentwood neighborhood, and the same neighborhood that the house that we're going to talk about's in. He lived there all his life. Well, I'm sorry, not all his life. He grew up there with his mom and his dad, and right down the street from where he lived was this house. This house was built in the early 1900s, and it was a little bit different than the other houses in the neighborhood. Eventually, it was even designated a historical landmark. But this house always drew Bob to it. He was always interested in the house. He said, even growing up, every time he went by it, he would wonder what it was like inside the house. And for whatever reason, just really was fascinated with this house. But as Bob grew up, after school, he joined the military and actually had a pretty good career in the military. He was able to become an officer. And while he's in the military, he meets his future wife, Lisa. So he and Lisa get married and they start a family out in the New Jersey area. And after exiting the military, he and Lisa had started a family and he took a job with AT&T out in that area. So things are going well for them. His position is suiting him quite well, and they begin to build a house out in that area. Lo and behold, shortly after starting to build the house in 1988, AT&T expands in the Pittsburgh area. Now, Lisa and Bob had always planned on moving back to the Pittsburgh area at some point in their lives. They certainly didn't intend on doing this 2 years after building a house. But as life had plans for them, in 1988, AT&T expands in the Pittsburgh area and Bob has to relocate for work. So a blessing and a curse, because he's got to relocate, but it's back to the Pittsburgh area, which they eventually wanted to do anyway. So Bob is talking to his mom one evening, says, telling her the news that they've got to move back to the area. So he and Lisa need to come back and start looking for a house. Guess which house is for sale?
The
house that Bob was always drawn to all of his life. His mom says, you know, hey, that house down the street that is for sale, you know what I'm talking about. And of course, Bob knew exactly what she was talking about. So they reach out. He makes an offer on the house without going to look at it because he's very familiar with it. So he makes a really low ball offer to start with. And they say, yep, we'll take it. So Bob and Lisa head back to the Pittsburgh area to take care of some paperwork and do a walkthrough on the house. Obviously, they want to see the inside. So they're taking a tour of the house. And as they're walking through, their youngest son, at the time, they had Bobby and Jessica. And I'll give you the ages of all their kids. But during the walkthrough, they have Bobby and Jessica with them. And Jessica keeps saying that she doesn't like the house. It gives her the creeps. And Lisa kind of gets some strange vibes from the house as well. So as they're looking through the area, they're looking through the house, they go down to the basement, they're looking at the basement. Bobby kind of wanders back upstairs and all of a sudden they hear young Bobby start to scream. So they go to investigate, they find Bob, everything seems to be okay. But what's odd is the owner of the house, his wife says, "What did you see?" That's her reaction to Bob screaming. "What did you see? What scared you?" So that kind of catches Bob's ear that she would say something like that. And he says, you know, Bobby doesn't say anything. He's crying. So she turns to Bob and says, "You need to keep a better eye on him." So just, again, nothing terrifying, but a strange exchange while they're doing this walkthrough, which unfortunately foreshadows things to come. Bob and Lisa get moved into the house. Their family consists of Jessica, who we mentioned. Jessica is the only girl in the family. She's 4 at the time that they move. Bobby's 3. David is 2. And young Charlie is only 2 months old. So in 1988, they're all moved into the house and they begin their new life.
4, 3, 2, and 2 months.
Dang.
Those two were busy.
Yeah. They needed TV.
Well, Bob does say they, you know, once they got married, they had every intention of starting a family. So it sounds like that was intended to
fall that way.
To grow the family. But yeah, so they've got 4 kids, as Golden Jay said, 4, 3, 2, and 2 months. So they get all moved into their house. Bob's job is going fine. You know, he's close to mom now. And spring rolls around. So he gets out and he starts working in the yard in his new house. While he's working out in the yard, planting some flowers, things like that, he finds a metal box buried in the front yard, a small metal box. But he, when he opens it, he finds like some religious items in the box, including like rosary beads, that kind of thing. So he thinks, well, you know, this might be important to somebody. So he reaches back to the original owners of the house and says, hey, I found this in the front yard. You know, is this important to anybody? And the former owner says, you should probably put that right back where you found it. So through the course of the conversations with the former owners, Bob does say, like, have you guys had any issues in this house? Like anything strange? And the former owners say, nope, not at all. In fact, we've actually had church services in that house and there's never been any issue. Which really, if you think about it, why would you have, you know, after the conversation, Bob kind of reflects on it and says to himself, like, why would you have church services in the house? So again, in retrospect, that adds to some of the creepy indications of some of the conversations and things like that.
Right.
So Bob does put the religious artifacts right back where he found them and finishes up his guarding and things. And as they're settling into life in the new house, the only odd thing is there's a coat closet under the stairs, and there's a light bulb with a little pull chain, you know, to turn the light bulb on and off. Mm-hmm. Every time Bob or Lisa goes into that closet, the chain is wrapped around the light bulb. Like, even Bob will be in there and minutes later go back and the chain will be wrapped around the light bulb. Again, it's not like terrifying or anything, but odd. So Lisa finds the same thing. Every time she goes in there, the chain is wrapped around the light bulb. So chalk that off to something odd, but again, things are starting to accumulate, you know, odd things in this house. So a couple years go by, and again, these little odd things are still going on, the light things, and then Bobby and Jessica have some friends over one evening, and Bob and Lisa go upstairs, and Bobby and Jessica and their young friends are downstairs watching TV. And so they decide to close the door so mom and dad can't hear any commotion that's going on downstairs. There's pocket doors in between like the TV area and like the hallway. So they go over and they pull the pocket doors closed, and they continue to watch TV and giggle and carry on. And suddenly they hear pounding on that pocket door. Like somebody, you know, so they think they're in trouble. They think it's mom or dad. But when they go out and they look, there's nobody in the hallway. So odd, but you know, maybe somebody's trying to scare them. So they close the doors and go back to what they're doing. And then they hear heavy footsteps go up the steps. And then they hear the footsteps come down the steps. So again, thinking mom or dad is coming down to yell at them, they peek out into the hallway through the pocket doors, and mom's not there, dad's not there, but it is freezing in the hallway, like just a freezer. And as they peer down the hallway, they see a hooded figure. So they slam the doors and go back to the couch and the TV, and basically they're too afraid to go upstairs or to go back into the hallway. So eventually they do relay that story to Bob. And of course, you know, he chalks it off to it scaring themselves. They were probably watching scary movies that mm-hmm. they weren't supposed to be watching. But a little while later, young Bobby is after school. He comes home and he's laying in his bedroom on the bed, and he sees the doorknob to his room turn and the door opens. And what he describes as a ball of electricity floats into his room, right into the center of the room, floats back out of the room, and the door shuts and the doorknob turns again. Once he gets the courage to go and look in the hallway, he jumps out of bed and runs to the hallway and opens the door. He also sees the same hooded figure that he had seen in the hallway, which then vanishes. So now Bobby's seeing things. He's getting scared. He doesn't like the house. The house is giving him the creeps, but everybody's kind of chalking it off. Young kid, active imagination. But they find out that Bobby's so afraid of this figure that he saw and the ball of electricity that Lisa actually finds Bobby sleeping in his closet. So then they realize, okay, this kid's, he's so afraid of what he's seeing that he's sleeping in his closet. And so now they start to become a little concerned about what's going on with Bobby. Because it's not, you know, Lisa had seen the one thing, the initial hooded figure, but she's not seeing things that Bobby's seen. So now this goes on for the course of like 8, 9, 10 years, where just little things here and there. But what they're finding now is Bobby's getting increasingly depressed, and to the point where they're really getting concerned about him. And he still complains about the room. He still doesn't like the room. He's still afraid. So Bob and Lisa decide that now they're concerned enough that they trade bedrooms with him. You know, the kid's so afraid of his room that they decide, all right, you know, he's not getting sleep. So they trade rooms with him, and they move into Bobby's room, which will later be called the blue room of the house. So after they trade rooms, now Lisa's getting very depressed. So she's starting to become withdrawn. She's becoming depressed. Bobby's still going through some issues. And to the point where they start to seek medical treatment for this depression and how withdrawn they are from the family. Well, things had gone good for Bob with his career, and he had actually gotten into politics over the past few years while they were there, to the point where he was a councilman, and then in the late 90s became a county commissioner. Well, in 2003, Bob becomes so concerned with everything that's going on with the family that he actually leaves politics. And he had been fairly successful. He'd made some friends, made some enemies. He's very critical of anybody that he thought was corrupt in the least bit and was very vocal about it. But in 2003, Bob leaves politics completely again to try to get things, because he realizes things with the family are starting to spiral out of control. So 2003, Bob's home more, trying to get things squared away with the family. And lo and behold, his daughter comes home and lets him know that she's pregnant. She's only 16 at this age, at this point.
Good thing, so, you got out of politics at that point, huh?
Yeah. Well, initially, obviously, he's trying to figure out how to deal with the fact that his 16-year-old daughter is pregnant. But he resolves to the fact that he's actually excited about having a grandkid. So mm-hmm. He initially, obviously, this is a big shock to the family. But Bob seems to take it in stride. And they make plans to deal with that situation. Also in 2003, Bob's 88-year-old aunt finds herself in a position where she can't live alone anymore. And they've got room, so his aunt moves in with them. Now, I wasn't able to find out a lot of information about who this aunt was or anything like that, other than the fact that it was Bob's aunt, and she found herself in a position where she needed to move in with somebody. So Bob extended the offer. Well, the same year, again, we're at 2003. The same year, Bobby's still struggling with emotional issues, with mental issues. He's still not doing okay. And so Bobby takes him and Charlie, and they go out and spend the day together, try to do some father-son bonding. And things seem to go okay through the day. But when they get home, as soon as they get home, again, Bobby starts to become short-tempered, angry with Bob, to the point where they start to yell back and forth, and it becomes physical. Now, at this point, again, we're in 2003, Bobby is as tall as Bob and maybe even has him by a couple pounds. So this fight this verbal fight turns physical and Bobby literally attacks Bob. So while this is going on, the aunt's present, everybody's getting upset, Charlie's there. Bob's voice changes, according to everybody that was present, and becomes very deep and guttural. And, you know, he basically tells Bob that he's going to do him some great harm. Well, Charlie gets involved, and you would think Charlie tries to break it up, but Charlie actually begins to attack Bob as well and tells him that they're going to attack him, and then they're going to call the police, and they're going to have him arrested. And that's exactly what happens. So the fight gets broken up, but Charlie does call the police, and him and Bobby accuse Bob of domestic violence. And so Bob is taken away and arrested that night. So he gets arrested and makes bail, doesn't go home, obviously a bad idea. So he goes to stay with his friend for the night. And while he's at his friend's, he gets a phone call that that aunt that had just moved in that year passed away after the altercation. Oh. So tragic, but not, you know, nobody attacked her or anything like that. It was just very unfortunate that this night where they have all this trauma in the family, they also have, they lose the aunt. She passes away.
Right.
So Bob figures maybe he should let things chill at home for a little while. He was trying to make the situation better, but it seems like he may have unintentionally made it worse. Lisa's not doing so great. Obviously, Bobby's not doing good. Charlie got aggressive with him. So he goes to stay with his mom for a couple months. So he stays with his mom until the end of the year, you know, around December, and he and Lisa begin are talking, and they think it's probably a good idea that Bob comes back home. I'm assuming, you know, it's getting close to the holidays, and so Bob moves back home in December. And some the small activities continue. You know, that now there's no, everything seems to simmer down between him and Bobby and him and Charlie, but the little things continue, like the chain. Still, every time they go in that closet, the chain is wrapped around the light bulb. The hooded figure is occasionally seen by somebody out of the corner of their eye, but, you know, the not the ball of electricity or anything like that.
Peter, did I read something about quarters in this story too, where they were found quarters on the bed or something like that? It might be something else I was researching, trying to remember. I've been sitting here trying to think about that.
There were some items found that we'll talk about.
Okay.
But I don't remember reading anything quarters specifically about that.
Okay.
But there are some odd artifacts found. All right, so we're in the end of 2003. Bob moves back home. Things seem to have simmered between him and the boys, but as we said, this small activities continue. Well, as I mentioned, the hooded figure is still seen, and Bob figures, and I don't mean to put words into his mouth, but I'm assuming he figures, okay, things aren't, they're not worse, but they're not necessarily better, and we're still having these odd things. So Bob reaches out to a Mother Maria at a convent not far from him. Now, it's not that Bob's not even Catholic, not overly religious, but he made friends with the nuns at this convent during his political activity. A lot of times, people would bring, you know, food and stuff for the holidays, and he would take it there because it was just too much. He didn't want it to go to waste. So he began taking some of that, the holiday treats and things, over to the sisters at the convent, and he got to be friends with this Mother Maria. So he reaches out to Mother Maria at the convent local to him because he had gotten to be friends with her during his political career, just taking some holiday treats over to the convent, and again got to be friends with this Mother Maria. So he reaches out to her and says, you know, this has been going on at the house for years. something's not right. You know, we're seeing things that, you know, the odd things in the front yard. And she takes them serious. So she reaches out to Father Ed. Now, we can find everybody's last names, but for the sake of making sure I'm not inaccurate with anything, we'll use their first name. So Mother Maria reaches out to Father Ed and says, hey, I've got this friend. He's having issues with the house. You know, do you think there's anything we can do? And Father Ed takes it seriously. And he says, yeah, you know, we'll go over and we'll do some blessings and things like that. So Father Ed comes over to the house and they do some blessing of the houses and, you know, I guess what you would consider a cleansing of the house. And it seems like it helped. But then one morning, Bob finds every piece of Native American art that he had in the house upside down.
Oh.
This had never happened before. And it wasn't like he had a tremendous amount, but, you know, being in that area, he had some interest in Native American history that was around the area. And he had a few pieces of artwork that depicted like Native American battle scenes and things like that. And those were all upside down one morning. So it seems like what we thought may have calmed things may have instigated them to get a little worse. So Bob reaches back out to Father Ed, says, you know, this happened. So Father Ed comes back out. They do some more religious activity in the house, try to get things, you know, cleansed, and it doesn't seem to work. So what it appears is Bob did reach out to the Baptist church, and, you know, forgive me if this gets a little cloudy because I had a lot of different sources, but it seems like, because it is odd that Bob's not Catholic, but he's drawing help from the Catholic church. And it appears that he did try to get help from the Baptist church, who didn't really buy in, let's say, as much as the personal relationship that he had with Mother Maria,
right,
who had
a relationship
with Father Ed. So, again, forgive me if that's not correct. I certainly don't want to slight the Baptist church, but that's what it appears is. That's why he was working with the Catholic church, is just because he had better buy-in that he was having a problem, and they were willing to come out and help. So, again, all the Native American art is upside down, so now that triggers Bob to look into the history of the house. So he starts to do a little bit of investigation of what's the relevance of all the Native American art being upside down. So what we find is the house was built, again, in the early 1900s. It was built in 1909. It's now a historical landmark. It had three previous owners. So the owners that Bob had bought the house from, and then there were two owners previous to that. Can't find too much about the history of the land. Nobody seems to say that they had any kind of strange activity prior to Bob. So he's not finding a whole lot in the history. But what he did find is one of the previous owners, not the ones that lived there before him, I don't believe. I think it was the ones before that. The ones that lived there in the 1900s. Were accustomed to a very lavish lifestyle, and they held parties at the house. Again, it's a very grand house, but they started to run low on funds. And so, as a way to kind of supplement their income, they rented a room out to a doctor. So they rent this room out to the doctor, but it's not for him to live there. He lives in another house, which still stands in the Pittsburgh area, apparently is empty right now. But the doctor rents this room basically as an office. So he's renting this room from them and performing private practice. And he's performing private practice that you would want to be secretive in the mid-1900s. So again, relating back to the other story that we talked about with the doctor on the north side, this doctor is also performing illegal abortions in this rented room that he said he was using as a doctor's office. So guess which room this doctor had rented in the 1900s?
Blue room.
Right. So we find that Bobby's room was actually the room where this doctor was performing this private practice. So looking back prior to the house being built, they start looking, were there any historical events that happened on the land prior to the house being built? And what Bob finds out is in 1792, there were unrest between the settlers moving into the area and the Native Americans that were already in the area. And what did happen is there was a what's described as a marauding group of Native Americans who were really upset at the number of settlers that were coming into the area. They wanted to discourage additional settlers coming into the area. This is near Fort Pitt, was at the confluence of the three rivers. And so these marauding Native Americans find a mother and three young kids that were settling in that area and murdered all of them. So that occurred, and it appears to be it occurred on the land where this house was now built. So that happened during the Northwest Indian War, which is 1785 to 1795, is when that took place. And that they were able to find historical documentation of that. So now...
Can you believe finding that historical documentation? I mean, that's crazy that they have it.
I guess it was well documented because of the fact that, you know, this was when settlers were trying to move into the area and they were trying to get established. And this group of upset Native Americans went to the extreme to try to discourage additional settlers from coming into the area.
Insane.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. I understand why. I mean, I understand the idea of it, but, you know, just scare them off, you know. But yeah, it's too bad. Three kids.
And for Bob to kind of look for the tie-in with anything that happened on the land, and through that research, him finding out about, you know, the doctor that had rented the room.
Right.
So it seems like now they're starting to gather some traumatic events that may have contributed to something going on in the house. So activities continuing, you know, the Father Ed did what he could to try to help out, but they're still having issues in the house. They're still having personal issues with people that are living in the house. So Bob reaches out to Mayor Tom Murphy, who Bob had built a personal relationship with him again during his time as a in the politics. Well, according to Bob in interviews, he reached out to Tom Murphy, said, "Is there anything you can do? Do you know anybody that might be able to help do more than what we've done so far?" And Tom basically pulls out the big guns and reaches out to his personal friend, Bishop Donald Worrell. Now, Donald Worrell has been on record to say, "Yes, I was involved in this. Yes, we tried to help Bob." So it's not like, you know, these people have said, "Nope, that never happened. I wasn't there."
Right.
So, Donald Worrell is actually now a cardinal. He's moved up from bishop to cardinal, but it is documented that he did try to help at the time, Bishop Worrell assigned this case to a Father Ron and said, "Look, this guy's definitely having negative things happening in his house. You know, I vouch for him that this is on legit going on." So he reaches out to Father Ron. Father Ron puts together a team to go out and see if he can help. He doesn't actually travel out to the house, though. He reaches out to Bob via phone, talks to him about what's going on. And tries to formulate a plan, and he says to Bob, which is very odd, he says, have you ever considered having a paranormal team come out? Which Bob definitely didn't expect that. And again, these are just my thoughts. This hasn't been reported in an interview or anything like that. But it sounds like to me, Father Aaron might have been thinking, look, these things were already done. You know, Father Ed had already been out there at the request of the mother. So I think he might have thought what his initial actions would be were already done.
Right.
Again, just my thoughts. So he says, have you ever considered having a paranormal team come out? So Bob does figure what has he got to lose, right? He knows absolutely, a little bit about what's happened in the area. He knows a little bit of what's happened in the house, and he knows what happened on the property. So Bob reaches out to the first paranormal group that he can think of, which is the Paranormal Research Society at Penn State University, which that might ring a bell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you guys remember the television show Paranormal State?
Yep.
On A&E? This is an episode that you can go back and watch that when they came out to the house on Brownsville Road to do an investigation. So lo and behold, Ryan Buell and his team come out to the house to do an investigation. And they ask him, like, you know, what's going on? What are some of the things? And through the course of the conversation, Bob mentions the fact that the light in this closet just continues to wrap itself around the bulb. And every time we go in there, we can't turn the light on. We have to unwrap it. And again, he tells him, like, just minutes later, like, I'll close that door, go down the hall, come back, and that cord is wrapped around the light again. Well, as the team investigates this closet, see if there's anything odd in there, they're calculating, like, there's room behind this wall in between where the steps are. Have you ever, like, looked in there? And Bob says, no, I never really gave it much thought that there would be any room past the usable closet space. So they actually convince Bob to open up that wall and see what's behind it. So they open up the wall in the closet, and this is where Golden Jay, you alluded to some things being found in the house. This is what they find. They find an amber stone. They find a bird skeleton, which you would think, well, okay, old house, bird skeleton. But this is in a closed, walled up area that they find this bird skeleton. They find three playing cards. They find the Queen of Hearts, the Three of Hearts, and the King of Spades. Then they find a hand-drawn picture of the house. This clearly somebody drew a picture of the house. And they find a hand-drawn picture of a man with a pig's head.
Hmm.
Very, very odd, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this doesn't immediately make sense to anybody. But going back to the time that the house was constructed and through the research from the Paranormal Research Society, it's kind of surmised that these things would add up to a curse on the original owners of the house. So, you know, there's speculation here that one of the workers involved in the construction of the house may have for some reason wanted to put a curse on the owners of the house. So before they walled up this area that wasn't going to be used, these items were put in there. Again, speculation, but it's very odd that these very specific things would be put in there. So once this room's opened up and these items are found, very, very, very shortly after that's done, the hooded figure is seen again in the hallway. So the Paranormal Research Society finds these things, surmises that there was a curse put on the homeowner. And I have seen the episode, but I didn't have an opportunity to go back and watch it again before we talked. but it doesn't sound like any solutions to the problem were able to be identified other than to continue to keep working with the church representatives and see if they can ultimately put an end to the activity in the house, which, so you could see as we're escalating things that the church are doing, ultimately where we're going to head to, right? So Bob reaches out to the church, says things are beginning to ramp up. We think we might have opened up something that we shouldn't have. And the church finally commits to an exorcism. So in the time between the paranormal investigation and the time that the exorcism can be conducted, activity is ramping up in the house. Bob's at his wit's end. And he actually, and he talks about this, that he begins to play the movie, The Passion of the Christ. And he plays it trying to, it sounds like he was just trying to infuse the house with as much positive energy as he can, as much religious overtones as he can, because, you know, crosses will fall off the walls, you know, it definitely, in Bob's mind, it's quite obvious that they're dealing with something evil here.
Right, right.
So even to the extent where I believe it was mentioned that he even put mirrors, he played this videotape on repeat, even put mirrors so that it could be seen from everywhere in the house. And so you can see, like, this, to me, this really tells me that Bob's at his wit's end, right? He's kind of throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks.
Right.
So the church comes out and they do what's described as an exorcism. Now, I know there are true exorcisms and then there are other forms of exorcism, which I believe Logan referred to as kind of exorcism light in one of the episodes. And it's, I don't know if it was a full-on exorcism or if they were basically doing the initial stages of the exorcism, but things did quiet down for a short period of time, but then they started to ramp right back up. So Bob reaches out and says, you know, whatever we did didn't work. And so now this hooded figure is seen in the basement. You know, things just aren't good again. So the church comes back and they decide to do a cleansing of the basement. So they take Bob downstairs and they're doing this cleansing. And as this is going on, according to Bob, the hooded figure is seen in the corner of the basement. So Bob gets aggressive and begins to shout at the figure, calls him out as a demon, says that they're going to get rid of him. And according to some interviews, this figure melts into the floor of the basement. So now the question is, did we get rid of it or did it just retreat? It sounds like it just retreated because right. Things don't stop. So the church actually has, they don't call it a psychic. I don't think the church would ever refer to anybody as a psychic. They call it, I believe they called her an intuitive or something like that. But there's some reference made to somebody getting involved with the case, a lady that is in touch with these things that are going on. For back, lack of a better description, but I think you get what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like she's sensitive and she can. Yeah. Kinda,
yeah. Because they're just, again, they're grabbing at straws. They're trying to figure out what exactly they're dealing with here. So she says that the yard, there's a large tree in the front yard, which actually is near where Bob, if you recall back when they moved in and he found that box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It sounds like in the vicinity of that tree is where he found that box of religious things. But this sensitive person says something horrible happened at that tree. She can't tell exactly what, but she says something horrible happened at that tree. There's somebody tied to that tree. So they start to investigate. And again, Bob thinks back to the fact that those people were murdered on the land back, you know, by the marauding group. And so ground penetrating radar is used to look into the ground. And I may have messed this time. This may be also when PRS was involved with, I think they might have been ones that help facilitate this ground penetrating radar. And again, I should have watched that episode again before we talked, but basically I found two different versions. One version says four bodies were identified by the ground penetrating radar, buried vertical.
What?
Horizontal.
Really?
Now, I didn't find any interviews where Bob spoke specifically about that, but I found a contradicting description that the bodies weren't seen, but four vertical graves were seen. So possibly where bodies were.
Right,
so
right.
I can't tell you for certain whether they actually found bodies or whether they found where bodies had been.
Well, with our knowledge of dig a hole and find nothing, a lot of the times when they do the ground penetrating sonar, they find voids. So, I mean, that could be what they're talking about. They just find the four voids in there, depending on, you know, what the shape and all that is, but it could be just, you know, just the void with the radar.
And that's exactly what I was thinking, you know.
Yeah.
If you bury a body without anything to preserve it,
right,
for the course of 100 years,
right,
like you said, there's going to be a void.
Yeah.
Body. So I don't know for sure. I can't tell you for sure whether which was the case, but it certainly lends credit to the fact that this land is where this massacre of this mother and three children occurred.
Mm-hmm.
So the psychic also told Bob that she knew why he was always drawn to this house. That he was always drawn to this house because he was actually reincarnated from one of the babies that was aborted in the house.
Oh, wow.
So that, you know, everything seems pretty believable. That kind of hit me out of left field when I found that in the research that she had said that.
Yeah.
And there were some versions of this story indicated that, and I don't think they were able to find any proof of this, but it's alleged that when this doctor was performing these abortions, he was taking it upon himself to get to dispose of the evidence and possibly was cremating in the backyard. So if that's true, and again, I can't, a lot of the things in the story, I'd be willing to attest that there was enough sources and interviews with Bob that but this seems kind of thin, but it is out there. There's a theory that, you know, these aborted babies were possibly tied to that land or that house because they never left.
Right.
Right.
So Bob continues to work with the church to battle this what he believes now to be a demon. He becomes more involved with the church. The family is still fairly stressed. He does his best to rebuild the family dynamics, rebuild his relationship with the boys, but it's still a struggle. And nothing catastrophic happens, but these little occurrences still continue to happen in the house. So nobody's, it never completely resolves. And it takes a toll on Bob and Lisa's relationship. Bob and Lisa actually end up getting divorced. And Bob's son, David, who we didn't talk about very much, Bob's son, David, struggled very much with depression while he was in the house and continued to struggle with depression. And ultimately, Bob and Lisa lost David to suicide. And Bob talks a lot about whether he thinks the events of the house. I shouldn't say talks a lot, but he talks freely about whether he thinks that these things maybe drove David to that. And he doesn't believe that. And he believes that, you know, David struggled with mental illness and it's a tragedy, but was something that was going to happen. It wasn't, you know, he doesn't blame the house for that tragic loss. But as I said, him and Lisa landed up getting divorced. Lisa moved away. Bobby, Jessica, Charlie all moved away. They lost David. Bob's still in the house. Still to this day is in the house. Still struggles to... He has taken the mindset that the purpose of him being exposed to this was to testify that evil exists in this world. And if you believe that evil exists in the world, then you should believe that good exists. So he basically takes it as, he's not out there preaching or anything like that, but he's written a book, and he feels driven that he was driven to write this book, again, to illustrate that he's here to say for a fact that evil exists in the world. And if evil exists, then he's here to tell you that good exists as well. And so he does speaking engagements. Now, there's no way that this guy made up years and years of torment to make money on a book. You know, I don't believe that for 1 minute. And of course, that's immediately people go to that. Well, you know, he fabricated this. If he fabricated it, he would have had to start fabricating in 1988. I mean, right. You know, right. There's no way he had a 20-year plan to write a book. So, and the political figures that were involved with this, the religious figures that that were involved in this, are documented as saying, yes, this occurred. You know, we have the Paranormal State episode that we can go back and watch, and the things that Bob talks about are documented in that. So I think this story has a lot of credibility. Over the time period that it went over, and the fact that we have so many people that corroborate what Bob said. You know, he now lives in the house and he's opened it up as a bed and breakfast, but he doesn't say, like, come to a haunted house. It's a historical landmark. It's a beautiful house. And he opened it up as a bed and breakfast in the Pittsburgh area.
Has his kids spoke out about any of that with the book and all that, or no?
I didn't find any. No, I didn't find anything that his kids spoke out in favor or against, or said, you know, that never happened or this happened. I found documented recounts from other people involved with the case, but
right on.
I got a feeling his. I don't want to speculate, but, you know, I would assume that they're just trying to move on.
Right, right. Now, they lived there. I mean, you're talking about Bobby. When you talk about Bobby, Bobby wasn't four. How old was Bobby when they first moved in?
No, you might be right. Charlie was the youngest.
Yeah. I'm going to go back and look at my note here real quick.
Bobby was 3 when they moved in. Okay. So Jessica was 4.
Yeah. So that put Bobby about 18, 19 when they had their encounter where they fought. Is that sound about right?
Yeah.
I was doing the math on it while you were telling me, cause I was trying to think of how old he would be at that time.
Bob says that he was as big as Bob was at that point, his age, and even had him by a couple pounds. So I would venture to say,
yeah. So my thought is how long did the kids actually live in the house, let's just say they went to college. I mean, did they come back there to live, and what was, I mean, that's my thought process, is like, if they got away from the house, did things get a little bit better? Or is that, I mean, obviously with David and what happened to him is, you know, obviously a tragedy. Right. Maybe that didn't go away when they left the house, but yeah. I just was curious with the kids and if they'd reached out anything after that to see how they were doing as far as, you know,
the next away time, from it. Basically, the next timestamp I have on the story is the book was published in 2014.
Okay.
So it by 2014, you know, they had lost David, and Bob was at the point, you know, he and Lisa were no longer together. Right. So that's when things are as they are now, was 2014. So that was 10 years ago.
Right. Oh, my gosh. 10 years ago, J-Dub. Yeah, that's hard to wrap your head around.
Bob still does speaking engagements. He's been interviewed a handful of times. And I thought a lot of the interviewer questions, his responses, I think also lended some credibility. And the fact that, you know, like they said, do you help other people that are experiencing negative energies in their house? And he said, you know, that's just not what I'm cut out for.
Right.
You know, he said, I don't want to seek out and go through what he already went through in that house. But he also says that he does feel like he was given the opportunity to put this story out there. And again, he has reiterated a number of times that the reason he felt driven to put this story out there was to help people see that there is good and evil.
Right.
Like true evil and true good.
Mm-hmm. So the only thing that I can I want to say is that the hooded being that melted into the floor, I'm pretty sure J-Dub's gonna have nightmares about that. Yeah, tonight.
they asked Bob if activity continues in the house, and he is, I'm paraphrasing some of the interviews, but basically he has said that they still have odd activity, but not evil activity. And So when pushed on what he exactly meant by that, he said he does believe that there was a demon at the house that was trying to, you know, have evil influence on the family and affect their mood and their actions and things like that. Again, not blaming the tragic loss of David, but he does feel like that was a demon. And he said, we have to differentiate between basically a ghost and a demon. He said, just because you have a haunted house doesn't mean you have evil in your house.
Right.
So, and he doesn't say like that his house is haunted, but he says that there's still some activity that occasionally occurs, and it's been attributed to a lady that was at one point an inhabitant of the house, but he said it's very benign. He does not feel that the evil is there anymore. So I thought that was also interesting that he makes it a point to clarify, just because you might have paranormal activity in your house doesn't mean you have evil activity in your house.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's friendly ghost, J-Dub.
This whole story is so interesting. I mean, really, I mean, not like the big scares in, you know, the tables being glued to the ceiling or anything like that. But I mean, just the fact that it's the all this time passes and he never gives up on this house. I mean, he's there. And then to go back and find all that old stuff that, you know, it went on in it before he was there.
And I think you're right. It's not the sensational scares of, you know, somebody being ripped out of their bed.
Right.
But a lot of times those stories are one person saying, you know, well, this is what happened.
Right.
And you just have to take their word for it. Whereas I think Bob's story is very intriguing because of the fact that we have so many different avenues to lend credit to the events that happened.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, we've got news interviews, we've got books, a book, we've got the television show to look back on, and the story doesn't change. You know, he doesn't sensationalize it. He doesn't make it sound more terrifying in the book.
Right.
This is just what happened, and this is how we attacked it, and this is what the outcome was.
Do you suppose that him yelling at that figure in the basement goes into that idea that, I mean, I, you know, with it being evil, that with him taking charge and saying, you're not allowed to be here anymore, I want you to go, that because I've seen that come up in some other investigations. I'm trying to think of it. Was it Shipley that did that, where it was like, once you take control of your house, you know, then you can make the evil leave the house because they don't, you don't want it there. Do you think that's kind of maybe where that scenario went to?
So, like you said, you see that in other cases. I'm sure you guys are familiar with Chip Coffee.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Chip seems to advocate that pretty often of, you know, taking charge and standing up. So I don't know if this case, if that had the effect, but that seems to be a pretty consistent thing that they try to get the homeowners to do, is to stand up and take charge. And
right.
Which I got to think would be, I also think that lends itself to where Bob's mental state was at the time, where when you're to the point where you're just so up to here with it that you're no longer scared, you're angry.
Right.
I think that kind of tells us that at that point and everything that was going on, Bob was moving past being afraid and being angry.
Right.
He's putting the hammer down, man. He's putting his foot down. Get out. Demon, be gone. That's all I got.
What do you guys think of the fact that sensitive psychic person told him that he was reincarnated from?
Dude, that is that right there was the, I mean, that is that point in your story where it's like, no, I didn't even think about that.
That was a twist that when I was researching the story, I was like, what? But, you know, if we're not disputing the fact that this doctor was there, and we're not disputing the fact that he did what he did, and then she comes out of nowhere and says, I know why you're always drawn to this house. I can't say that I'm buying that hook, line, and sinker, but it's certainly interesting.
Oh, that's a hell of a twist. Yeah.
Because Bob makes no bones about it, that he was just unexplainably drawn to this house all his life. Even when he was a little kid, he said, you know, we'd go by and I'd always wonder what's it like inside that house, you know?
Right.
Boy, that was an interesting plot twist, if you will.
Yeah, definitely.
I'd love that plot twist of the whole thing. And that just, yeah, that definitely throws it out there into something you didn't even possibly think about.
You know, although the home, for the people that owned the home just prior to Bob deny anything strange happened there. And I think they even disputed him reaching out to them about the religious artifacts. But the fact that he mentioned that they had religious services in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she says, I think that's so poignant when Bobby screams when they're buying the house and she says, what did you see? Mm-hmm. I think that's just very telling that although publicly, from what I've seen, they disputed that things were going on. I don't know. I think there was mm-hmm. things going on. And the fact that his offer was immediately accepted.
You know, that was what I was going to get at was the first red flag that comes up is like, I'm going to throw them a lowball price. And they're like, no, we'll take it. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah. Yeah. So my suspicion is, and again, that's just my suspicion, is that they were ready to get out of that house.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Did you do that, J-Dub? And I'm not picking on, I mean, you know, selling the house that you were in, but were you ready enough to get out of that house where you took a lower price than what you really thought it was worth, or?
Well, we moved out and my parents took over the house to sell it and all that stuff. So my dad, whatever the offer was, my dad took care of it.
Gotcha. I didn't want you to think that I was like, oh yeah, give me kicked out. No. Take it. We're out of here. No. But I was curious.
I've been very fortunate. The house that we live in now, we're the first owners of this house, and I'm just as comfortable in the house at 3 a.m. that I am at 3 p.m. The house that I lived at prior to this, which I still own, is an older, much older house. And I had actually even been there on calls as a paramedic for the lady that landed up not being at the house anymore. And even that house, again, I'd go down in the basement to do laundry at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, never got the creeps, never felt weird, never. And we'd even occasionally hear stuff fall over in the attic, but there was no doubt in my mind that something had just fallen over.
Right. Right.
Never got creeped out. Never got. The only place I was ever creeped out was an apartment that I had lived in after college, but we could talk about that another time.
All right. All right. I get you on an episode with Logan and you guys can compare apartment notes, because that place he's living in now is there are stories that come out of there.
Well, I think this place was a former schoolhouse and also rumored to have been a biker hangout for a while. And so it was an interesting place, but again, I'm very fortunate. I've never felt creeped out in this house or my previous house or the house that I lived in growing up with my mom and dad. My dad still lives there now. Never felt creeped. You know, occasionally you flip off the basement light and you're jetting up the steps as fast as you possibly can because you're sure there's something there. Never had that feeling in that house either.
Right, right. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, I remember like the first time we had Peter on and he was saying that he could tell some of his own stories, especially from being a paramedic and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That he's had. So we might just have to look into like a whole episode of just your experiences. So
yeah, I mean, just more of a chit chat episode of just little things here and there. Some things funny, some things that make you ponder.
Right.
You know, it's not like I've ever seen a ghost walk across the living room, but.
I hope the pup is behind you, and J Dub is thrilled right now.
you can tell the faster she rocks.
She rocks a lot. When
she was talking about the aliens, she was rocking about 25 miles an hour.
I know.
I can't help it. That's her nervous tick.
She'd never be a good poker player.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't know that.
Oh man. Well, hey, listen, while you guys, you know, stare down each other with a pocket aces, we gotta wrap this up, Peter. Thank you so much, man. I love the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You did an amazing job presentation. I hope you don't think that we were just being quiet because we were just taking every bit of that in there. So you did an amazing job. Once again, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks again for having me on. Like I said, I really appreciate it. I appreciate what you guys do and the amount of work that you put into the podcast. And we're grateful that you guys are putting out such good content.
Thank you so much.
Well, we will definitely do this again. You and me will keep in touch. And like I said, you come back to my neck of the woods. We're going out for supper and going to hang out for a little bit. So as long as your schedule is on point for that. So,
yeah, absolutely. I'd love to.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for checking out the United States Paranormal. You can go check out, the UnitedStatesParanormal.com. And you can also go check out our Patreon at patreon.com/2SOP. Go check out our reaction videos or what's up right now. There is more to come. And, you know, you've heard me talk about it on the other side. So you should have all the details there. But if you have any questions, reach out at the United States of Paranormal at gmail.com and we will get right back to you to tell you everything you want to know. So, anything else?
I don't think so.
You got to go check out the pair of feet.
The pair of
feet. On the merch store. It's an amazing piece of artwork that, that yours truly put together. And well, I think the rocker chick had a little bit to do with it, but you know, she had a hand or a foot in it. I'm not sure. It's a great piece. Go get yours ordered today. You can't live without it.
No.
You want the rocker chick's feet on your chest. Like J Dub's got a little Bieber on her shirt.
I love it.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Peter, thank you. I look forward to seeing you again real soon. And hey, keep it spooky. And I'll see you on the other side.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the United States of Paranormal. Check us out at theunitedstatesofparanormal.com or at any other of our social media pages. At Twitter, at TOSOPPOD, at Instagram, at the United States of Paranormal, or Facebook, at the United States of Paranormal, or YouTube, at the United States of Paranormal 1795.
Please check out our other podcasts in the Golden Mojo Entertainment Network: The Call Guys, Golden Image Podcast, Indiana Chiefs Fans, The Golden 80s, Murd Nerds, and A Court of Books and Booze.
And if you have a location you would like us to check into or a creepy story that you would love to tell us, please email us at theunitedstatesofparanormal@gmail.com. Please like, rate, and subscribe wherever you listen.